are listening to Radio Albion.
A narration of an essay that was originally published on my Substack that covers the racially motivated abduction, torture, and murder of Chris Donald and the subsequent national media cover-up. If you enjoy this essay, please consider following me on Substack. At just after 3 p.m. on March 15th, 2004, 15-year-old Chris Donald and his 19-year-old friend Jamie Wallace were walking through the Pollock Shields area of Glasgow's south side. Nothing was unusual, the two boys were not involved in any trouble, they were simply enjoying a typical mundane afternoon off together. Chris, a third-year pupil at Bella Houston Academy, was not at school that day, and he and his friend Jamie Wallace had spent the afternoon casually wandering around the local neighbourhood. The pair had just walked to a local corner shop to buy snacks and were walking back along Kenmure Street, chatting and heading towards Jamie's house when their lives would change forever. Chris was about to be abducted, tortured and murdered in what would be one of Scotland's most violent and shocking crimes. But the reason for this abduction is what caused the case to be ignored by the media outside of Scotland at the time. Chris and Jamie were targeted solely because they were white teenagers. This is the story of Britain's most violent racist murder. Earlier that day, at around 2 p.m, Imran Shahid, Zeeshan Shahid and Danish Zahid had met at flat 11, 16 Heriot Street, which was also situated in the Pollock Shields area of Glasgow. The ringleader of the gang, Imran Shahid, his brother Zeeshan Shahid and Danish Zahid left the flat and took a taxi to pick up another accomplice, Zahid Mohammed. On their return to the flat, they were joined by the final member of the gang, Mohammed Faisal Mushtaq. The previous night, the gang's leader Imran Shahid had been involved in an altercation in a nightclub with a group of white men and wanted revenge, not on those involved in the fight, but on any white boy he could find. And at around 3 p.m, all five men left the flat and took a stolen, silver-coloured Mercedes-Benz and began driving around the neighbourhood explicitly looking for a white boy to abduct and assault. And it didn't take them long to find their victim. At 3:08 p.m, the silver Mercedes entered Kenmure Street in Pollock Shields. Chris Donald and his 19-year-old friend, Jamie Wallace, were walking casually along the pavement, chatting to each other on their way to Jamie's house. The Mercedes screeched to a halt right next to the boys, and multiple members of the gang burst out of the vehicle and immediately launched into a violent physical assault on both teenagers. Jamie Wallace attempted to fight back, but was overpowered and beaten by the gang. However, during the chaos, Jamie managed to break free from the gang's grip and sprinted away to safety. As Jamie made his escape, the rest of the gang targeted Chris. Despite his desperate attempts to break free and fight the gang off, Chris was restrained and bundled into the back seat of the Mercedes, where he was forced into the rear footwell. As the car doors slammed shut, witnesses heard Chris screaming, "I'm only 15! What have I done?" The silver Mercedes then sped away from Kenmure Street, disappearing within seconds, with the entire assault and abduction taking less than 2 minutes to execute. Jamie Wallace and several horrified local residents who had witnessed the assault and abduction immediately called the police to report the kidnapping. Court testimonies revealed that a rookie beat officer, PC Craig Collier, was dispatched to handle the incident and took Jamie Wallace's initial statement. PC Collier, who had only been on the beat for a few weeks, admitted in court that he had failed to record vital details in his notebook from Jamie Wallace's first statement. Crucially, Jamie told him that one of the attackers was a local gang leader known as Baldy. This was the nickname given to Imran Shahid, but the officer neglected to pass this crucial detail to the Criminal Investigation Department. At the time, the Pollock Shields area of Glasgow was experiencing frequent low-level friction and territorial posturing between local gangs, which frequently led to confrontations and even brawls. As such, due to a combination of PC Collier's inexperience and a wider miscategorisation of the crime, the police did not initially act or attempt to pursue the gang. In the immediate aftermath of the abduction, mobile phone tracking and vehicle logs showed that the gang drove east out of Glasgow via the M8/M74 motorways and headed straight to Strathclyde Country Park, arriving at the park at 3:31 p.m. Here, the gang paused briefly as Zahid Mohammed started to have second thoughts before backing out of what was escalating into a severe crime. Zahid Mohammed then left the other gang members and took a taxi back to Pollock Shields. Then, at 4:04 p.m, the remaining four men embarked on a harrowing 200-mile motorway journey across Scotland, with Chris trapped inside the vehicle. The 200-mile journey undertaken by the gang was motivated by a frantic and desperate effort to find a location to imprison and torture Chris. During the journey, Chris was continuously threatened with a knife, a hammer, and a screwdriver whilst being threatened and beaten by the gang. As a result, he suffered multiple blunt force injuries and extreme psychological terror throughout the duration of the multi-hour drive. The Mercedes travelled north up the motorway system past Stirling and Perth, heading straight to Dundee before looping back down to Glasgow. During the drive, nearly 200 mobile phone calls were made by the gang members. Imran Shahid and his accomplices had frantically called various local friends, criminal underworld associates, and acquaintances in Dundee. They had been asking for the use of a house, garage, or flat where they could take Chris and torture him undetected. However, everyone that they had contacted refused to get involved, leaving the gang stuck in the moving car. Frustrated by the situation, the gang began heading back to Glasgow, and as they neared the end of the loop, they made a crucial phone call to a white associate to ask where they could go. The associate, 23-year-old Andrew Ingram, suggested the secluded Clyde Walkway in the east end of Glasgow, describing it as an isolated and quiet spot. Acting on this recommendation, the Mercedes pulled into the walkway area just as darkness fell at around 7:15 p.m. This is where the murder of Chris Donald took place. After a continuous stream of almost 200 calls that took place over nearly 4 hours, whilst the gang took Chris on a 200-mile round journey, all of the gang's mobile phones went completely silent at just after 7:15 p.m. The phones then remained completely inactive for approximately 20 minutes. During this period, the gang subjected Chris to a horrifying level of violence. Chris was dragged from the rear footwell of the silver Mercedes-Benz, weakened, terrified, and injured from the horrifying abuse that he had suffered during the multi-hour drive. He was held down on the ground by the gang members before he was stabbed 13 times. A post-mortem examination revealed that the blade had severed 3 of Chris's major arteries, as well as puncturing his lungs, liver, and a kidney, causing catastrophic internal bleeding. However, this was not the end of Chris's ordeal. Despite the loss of blood, Chris was still alive, so the gang doused him in petrol, struck a match, and set him alight. Thinking that Chris was now dead, the gang turned, got back in the silver Mercedes, and drove away. However, despite everything he had been through, Chris was still alive and began to desperately attempt to put out the flames that had engulfed his body. Chris crawled away from where he had been stabbed and set alight and made his way down a grassy embankment toward a cycle path close to the nearby River Clyde. In a desperate, final attempt to smother the petrol-fueled flames consuming his body, he rolled around in a wet, muddy hollow. Ultimately, the combination of catastrophic internal bleeding from the 13 stab wounds and the severe thermal trauma overcame him, and he passed away in that hollow. The following morning, Tuesday, March the 16th, 2004, Chris's partially naked body was found by a passing cyclist. He was discovered curled up in the fetal position in the mud-filled hollow where he had desperately attempted to put out the flames. The gang were well aware of the gravity of their crimes, and immediately after leaving Chris Donald for dead near the banks of the River Clyde, they began a calculated multi-stage cover-up to destroy forensic evidence and evade law enforcement. As Chris desperately tried to crawl away and extinguish the flames engulfing his body, the gang got back into the stolen silver Mercedes-Benz and drove directly from the Clyde Walkway across the city to Granby Lane in Hillhead, located in Glasgow's West End. At approximately 8:07 p.m., they set the Mercedes on fire in a deliberate attempt to incinerate any DNA evidence, fingerprints, fibres or blood traces left behind by both themselves and Chris. After burning the vehicle, the gang members quietly slipped back into their home neighbourhood of Pollockshields. They immediately attempted to establish false alibis and instructed their associates to lie to the police regarding their whereabouts on the evening of March 15th, 2004. However, once the police had officially identified Chris's body the following morning, a massive murder investigation was launched, and the gang members realised it wouldn't be long before they were identified and brought in for questioning. Within days of the murder, the ringleader of the gang, Imran Shahid, his brother Zeeshan Shahid, and Mohammed Faisal Mushtaq boarded flights and fled the United Kingdom to Pakistan to escape arrest. Whilst the gang were in hiding, local Strathclyde police launched a massive investigation, and despite the gang's efforts to keep the crime hidden, investigating officers pieced together an accurate picture of exactly what happened on the day of Chris's abduction and murder. The key evidence related to the gang's mobile phones and detectives mapped the gang's exact 200-mile journey across Scotland by pulling records of the nearly 200 phone calls they made while trying to find a safe house. By cross-referencing timestamps with the cellular tower masts that routing signals hop between, police proved the killers were moving along the M8, M74 and north toward Dundee exactly when Chris was missing. Finally, the sudden simultaneous 20-minute blackout of all their phones, right at 7:15 p.m, perfectly isolated the window of Chris's murder. But mobile phone data wasn't the only evidence that tied the gang to the murder. The gang assumed that setting fire to the silver Mercedes-Benz in Granby Lane would destroy all physical evidence. However, forensic scientists meticulously combed through the charred skeleton of the vehicle and hit several breakthroughs. Forensics found traces of Chris's blood on the exterior bonnet and the wing of the vehicle. The intense heat of the fire hadn't actually destroyed the blood, but instead it had quickly dried the blood and had actually preserved it. But there was more evidence inside the vehicle. Within the footwell of the rear seat, investigators found a heavily charred left trainer, and the unique tread pattern perfectly matched the right shoe that was found on Chris's body. Finally, the car hadn't burnt completely, and as a result, DNA evidence belonging to the gang's leader, Imran Shahid, was extracted from surviving unburnt interior surfaces, legally tying him to the vehicle. The final, and arguably most devastating blow to the gang's defence, came from inside their own circle. Zahid Mohammed, the fifth gang member who had panicked just after the abduction and had taken a taxi home from Strathclyde Country Park when the gang had parked up after the initial phase of the drive, was quickly arrested by police. Upon realising the severity of the crime and the fact he would face a life sentence if convicted, Mohammed struck a deal with the prosecution. He pleaded guilty to lesser charges of kidnapping and assault, and in exchange, he took the witness stand and testified directly against the other four members of the gang. His eyewitness testimony destroyed the remaining gang members' false alibis and laid out the entire plot, from the initial meeting on Heriot Street to the point where he left the gang at Strathclyde Country Park. But three of the gang members had escaped to Pakistan and remained in hiding for over a year. Because no official extradition treaty existed between the UK and Pakistan, Strathclyde police worked closely with Glasgow MP Mohammad Sarwar. Sarwar personally lobbied the Pakistani government and used local connections to initiate a historic one-off diplomatic handover, codenamed Operation Boxer, allowing Scottish detectives to arrest the Shahid brothers and Faisal Mushtaq on Pakistani soil and fly them back to face justice. This ensured all of the gang members could be tried in the UK. Because three of the gang members had fled to Pakistan and spent a year in hiding, there were in fact two separate criminal trials for the four defendants, who all entered not guilty pleas. Danish Zahid, the gang member who remained in Scotland, was tried first. Zahid's trial took place in November 2004, and he pleaded not guilty to the abduction and racially motivated murder of Chris Donald. His trial took place at the High Court in Glasgow, and the jury rejected his defence, finding him guilty, and he was later sentenced to life imprisonment with a minimum term of 17 years. Following their extradition from Pakistan in late 2005, the final three gang members were put on trial together. Imran Shahid, the gang leader, Zeeshan Shahid, and Mohammed Faisal Mushtaq all pleaded not guilty and denied the charges of racially motivated murder, assault, and abduction. Their trial finally began on October 2, 2006 at the High Court in Edinburgh and was held under unprecedented tight security. Armed police officers patrolled the roof of the High Court in Edinburgh and bulletproof glass partitions were erected inside the courtroom, a historical first for a Scottish criminal trial. The trial lasted for over a month, during which Zahid Mohammed's insider testimony and cell tower logs dismantled the gang's defence. On November 8, 2006, the jury returned a guilty verdict for all three men. At sentencing, all three were handed life sentences, with Imran Shahid being sentenced to a 25-year minimum term, Zeeshan Shahid received a 23-year minimum term, and Faisal Mushtaq received a 22-year minimum term. As for Zahid Mohammed, the gang member who had a change of heart shortly after the abduction of Chris and who went on to give crucial evidence against the other gang members, he never stood trial. As he pleaded guilty to charges of abduction, assault, and attempting to defeat the ends of justice, he merely faced a sentencing hearing. Due to the fact he had panicked and exited the gang's vehicle at Strathclyde Country Park, and then gone on to strike a deal with the prosecution and provide crucial evidence, he was shown leniency. It must also be noted, he did not participate in the murder itself. As a result, he was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Three of the gang members later unsuccessfully mounted legal appeals. The gang leader, Imran Shahid, launched an appeal to overturn his murder conviction. He claimed to have new mobile phone evidence, which consisted of fabricated text entries which were brought forward by his accomplice, Danish Zahid. Zahid stood in court and testified under oath that Shahid was innocent and that a completely different gang was responsible for the murder. The appeal court judges rejected the appeal, branding the evidence as a pretense and an elaborate and sophisticated attempt to deceive the court. Because Danish Zahid lied under oath in order to attempt to free Shahid, Zahid was charged and tried for attempting to defeat the ends of justice. Ultimately, this appeal backfired spectacularly as it resulted in Zahid being sentenced to an additional 6 years in prison. Zeeshan Shahid and Faisal Mushtaq both formally lodged appeals in order to challenge the length of their sentences, arguing that they were excessive. However, in December 2009, both men abruptly dropped and abandoned their appeals. But this abrupt change of heart wasn't due to their conscience or because of any remorse they felt for the horrific crimes that they had committed. Just a week before their appeal hearings were scheduled to take place, Scotland's senior appeal judges had issued strict new sentencing guidelines, sending a clear signal that the courts intended to take a much harsher stance on violent knife murders. Fearing that the appeal court might actually increase their minimum jail terms rather than lower them, both men staged a humiliating climb down and withdrew their cases. While Imran Shahid failed to successfully challenge his guilty verdict, his legal team took a separate civil appeal all the way to the UK Supreme Court regarding his treatment inside the prison system. Because of severe non-stop threats to his life from other inmates, prison governors kept Shahid in solitary confinement for roughly 4 years and 8 months. Shahid's legal team argued that due to his treatment, his human rights had been violated. In October 2015, the Supreme Court ruled that while the prison was entirely justified in separating him for his own safety, the Scottish Prison Service had breached formal protocol by failing to get proper, timely authorizations for extensions to his solitary confinement across a 14-month window of that time. Despite winning the technical human rights declaration, the Supreme Court completely denied Shahid's demand for £6,000 in financial compensation, giving him no monetary payout. But this wasn't the end of Imran Shahid's legal troubles. In March 2016, a judge ordered Shahid to serve an extra 20 months in prison after he was found guilty of attacking another inmate. The assault occurred inside HMP Perth on August 5, 2014. Shahid had been allowed to keep personal fitness equipment inside his cell, and he had detached a 10-inch metal bar from this gym equipment to use as a blunt weapon, and had beaten fellow inmate Patrick Sanderman with the bar, hitting him 9 times to the head and body. The judge ordered this penalty to run consecutively, meaning it was added to the end of his minimum 25-year murder sentence. In a separate incident at HMP Inverness in 2019, Shahid picked out a random fellow prisoner and punched him in the head. Court hearings revealed he did this intentionally, hoping a fresh disciplinary infraction would force prison bosses to transfer him to a facility closer to his family in Glasgow. Today, 4 of the 5 gang members are still serving their sentences. Imran Shahid is serving a life sentence with a strict minimum term of 25 years before he can even apply for parole. As such, he is not eligible for parole until 2031. Because he is widely despised by the prison population and has been a frequent target for extreme violence, he has been repeatedly moved between several maximum security facilities in Scotland, including HMP Grampian and HMP Perth. He continues to serve much of his time under heavy protection or isolation. Zeeshan Shahid, Imran's brother, is eligible for parole in 2028. Mohammed Faisal Mushtaq is eligible for parole in 2027. Danish Zahid is eligible for parole in 2027. This date would have been earlier, but he received an extra 6-year sentence for lying during Imran Shahid's appeal. Zahid Mohammed is now free, as he was only sentenced to 5 years and would have been released after roughly half of that sentence. It is important to note that these dates are the earliest dates when these men can be even considered for parole, and there is no guarantee that they will be released at the first chance of eligibility. But it is highly likely that all of these men will eventually walk the streets of Scotland again. There are 2 further issues that must be discussed in relation to this crime. The first is, of course, the initial police report and how the report of Chris's abduction was handled by the police. The officer attending the scene, PC Collier, was undoubtedly green and mishandled the information provided to him by Jamie Wallace and other witnesses. It is worth noting that during the gang's trial, PC Collier publicly apologised to Chris's family for his omission of important information, specifically that he did not record the fact that it was Imran Baldi Shahid who had led the attack on the two boys. However, despite this failing, which was likely down to a genuine error, it would be unthinkable for the police to have behaved in this manner if the races were reversed. Had a young Pakistani boy been kidnapped by a white gang, would the police have only dispatched a single officer who had just entered the force? However, when the gravity of the crime emerged, the gang were investigated and charged with racially motivated offences, something that is actually quite rare when the victim is white and the attackers are from an ethnic minority background. The second issue that surrounds the case is the way the media dealt with the reporting of Chris Donald's murder. Whilst the murder received intensive front-page coverage in Scotland from day one, it was largely ignored by both the media and the press in England and Wales during both the initial investigation and the two trials. Immediately following the abduction and murder of Chris and the subsequent trial of Danish Zahid, the case was featured on national, UK-wide BBC television news only three times. The rest of the coverage was strictly quarantined to BBC Scotland regional bulletins. On the day Danish Zahid was convicted of the racially motivated murder of Chris Donald, the UK-wide BBC 6 o'clock news prioritised a light news feature about the opening of a new arts centre in Gateshead over the landmark trial verdict. As a result, the BBC was accused of a cover-up and faced a significant public backlash, which eventually led to senior BBC executives being forced to issue an official apology. Had a 15-year-old boy from an ethnic minority background been snatched off the street by a white gang, tortured for hours, and burned alive, coverage of the crime would have dominated UK-wide headlines for months. The lack of coverage of Chris Donald's brutal murder drew comparisons to the intensive media spotlight that was placed on the murder of Stephen Lawrence. Peter Fahey, who served as the race issues spokesman for the Association of Chief Police Officers at the time, went on to publicly address the disparity seen in the media coverage of the case. He admitted that it was a documented reality that the UK media did not engage with stories where the victims of hate crimes were young white men in the same way as they would if the victim was from an ethnic minority background. He went on to state that public bodies and media outlets were often hesitant to discuss the reality of anti-white racial violence. The murder of Chris Donald is to this day the most brutal racist murder ever to have taken place in Britain, and the victim was a 15-year-old white boy, and his killers were a Pakistani gang who explicitly went out looking for a white boy to kill. Chris was truly innocent, totally unknown to the gang, and picked at random, solely because he was white. Whilst justice was eventually done and Chris's killers did receive life sentences, there was a second injustice inflicted upon Chris and his family. This injustice is the way in which the media treated the case. Outside of Scotland, the BBC, the wider media and the press essentially ignored what should have been front page news for months, and the story would have been had the races been reversed and had Chris been from an ethnic minority background. This tragic case not only illustrates the brutality of anti-white crime, but also exposes how the media will ignore, downplay, or actively cover up such crimes because they don't fit the narrative the media wishes to push. Chris Donald will never walk the streets of Scotland again, and his family will forever not only have to deal with the loss of a loved one, but they will also have to live with the knowledge of the suffering that Chris went through on the day that he was murdered. Sadly, the same can't be said for the gang who murdered Chris and subjected him to unthinkable torture. They are all still alive and will one day likely walk the streets of Scotland again. Despite the unparalleled brutality of this case and the fact Chris's murder was motivated solely by race, there have been no investigations into systemic bias. no new laws drafted to protect other young white boys, and Chris's family have not been handed honours by the British government. Instead, thanks to the way that white victims are ignored by both the media and the political establishment, Chris's case will never receive the attention it truly deserves. Chris wasn't just a victim of a hate-filled anti-white gang from an ethnic minority community, he was also a victim of anti-white two-tier media bias.